I'm Lin-Manuel Miranda, and you're listening to Hard Knock Life.
Well, it's the NOC in full color. You see me? The Hard Knock Life. Comics, movies, and TV.
Yeah. Welcome to Hard Knock Life. I am Keith Chow.
Hi, I'm Dominic Moss.
Brittany's out this week, but we're holding it down.
Yeah, she's doing something like fun, right? And we're being two nerds in our basements recording a podcast, as far as I can tell.
That's right. She deserves the R&R, but yeah, we're going to talk about all the nerdy shit on our minds this week. There's a lot. I mean, it's the same shit. It's Andor and She-Hulk. But there are other things.
Yeah, there were a few developments.
Well, let's start in the world of Marvel, because last week we mentioned there's some turmoil on the Blade set. The director left. They're going back to rewrite the script.
Go back to formula. Oh, I think it's a Spider-Man line in there.
There are rumors that Mahershala Ali is not happy with the direction of the movie. So all of that is leading to a big shuffle of the MCU schedule.
And again, that's okay, because one should make Mahershala Ali happy with the movie that he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So all that said, they were supposed to go into production like today. And with all the turmoil, they don't have a director. The script is in limbo. They're pushing production later, which is going to push its release date later. It was supposed to come out next year, November 23. And it's now going to come out September 6, 2024.
Okay.
That's what is knocking the dominoes over. No pun intended. Because Deadpool 3 was supposed to come out on September 6, 2024.
Okay.
But now that Blade is taking that spot, Deadpool is now moving to November 8th, 2024.
Okay.
But that was supposed to be Fantastic Four's release day. So now Fantastic Four is being pushed to February 14th, 2025.
No one can see this, but I'm clutching my head trying to organize all these logos in the PowerPoint slide in my head. Right. Again, what year is it? It's 2022 now, right?
Right, so we're talking about movies that come out in 2025.
And
right,
we're vaguely sketched out till 2023, like Quantumania. And
that one's definitely coming out, I think.
Okay, which is next. Okay.
That's next after Wakanda.
Okay.
So great. Fantastic Four. Wait, sorry.
Okay, originally, like as of a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it Avengers, was it six? Whatever it is, Avengers King. Fantastic Four, and then Avengers Secret Wars?
Originally, it was supposed to... So, May 2025...
With
was
Fantastic Four and Secret Wars being the ostensible Phase 6.
Yeah, at this point, I can't even keep track of what phase is what. But,
okay.
Yeah, definitely, Kang was supposed to come out May 2025. And it's retaining its May 2025 date. But now, with Fantastic Four coming out in February 2025, it's going to come out before Kang Dynasty. It was supposed to come out after Kang Dynasty, but before Secret Wars. But now Fantastic Four is going to somehow set up Kang Dynasty.
Right.
And now the slot that it used to be in, which was November 2025, is going to go to some unnamed Marvel movie, which could be anything.
Cool.
And then the November 2025...
Dazzler, Alpha Flight.
It could be all of those movies.
Give me the Alpha Flight movie before I die, man. Anyway.
And now Secret Wars, which was supposed to come out in that slot, is moving to May 2026. So now there will be 1 year between the two Avengers movies rather than 6 months, which I think movies that big probably shouldn't come out in the same year, honestly.
Yeah, true that.
So anyway, this is not the first time Marvel has shuffled the deck halfway in progress, right? Like, remember, there was a time when Inhumans was announced, and there was a time when a lot of movies get announced and their titles change and things get shifted around. This is not pandemic related, right? Like 2020 and 2021, all the shifting was because of COVID. This is shifting because of seemingly the delay in Blade pushing everything else ahead or backwards or whatever it is. So,
okay, well, I mean, I don't want to pin it all on Blade, though.
It's not all on Blade, but
it could be a lot of things.
Having to vacate its 2023 date is what is kind of shifting everything else, because Deadpool just got announced. And this reminds me of when we were talking about the DC had just released the trailer that was like, here are all the movies coming out in 2022. And none of those movies are now coming out in 2022.
0% of that happens. Yeah, how about that? Well, like we were saying before we started recording the pod, I was saying, like, I'm not super concerned if they shift movies back, because that's fine. Takes more time. You're really getting ahead of yourselves, Marvel, with the sheer volume and ferocity of your release schedule. It's fine. Takes more time. It is noteworthy as, you know, a nitpicky on plot details, big Marvel nerdhead way, you know, to think when the order of them changes, that suggests that the reveals and the plot points will change somehow too. And that gets very interesting because, for example, like Fantastic Four is a big, there's going to be a lot of things introduced there. And, you know, according to the comics, Kang is a really big part of the Fantastic Four side of things. So it'll be interesting if Fantastic Four is fully set up as an entity before we get to, you know, presumably the big final, you know, Avengers, you know, two-part grand finale of this, I don't know. What do you think?
You know, like the original plan with Kang Dynasty, then Fantastic Four, then Secret Wars being the big culmination of the multiverse saga, you know, it did seem like, wow, that is quite a trio of films to come out back to back to back.
Yeah.
And I wonder now that with this unnamed movie coming out in between, if it's going to serve more of like the Captain Marvel role. Because remember, between right. Infinity War and Endgame, Captain Marvel almost served as a respite. It didn't advance the story between the movies. It was a flashback. It was a prequel almost. Yes. Right? It went all the way back to the 90s. So, you know, if you were to watch in order, it didn't necessarily add to what, you know, was developing between Infinity War and Endgame. And I wonder if this unnamed Marvel movie is going to serve more of that. And instead of, because to your point, if it's Kang FF Secret Wars, that is like, those movies are definitely one after another. It's not like Fantastic Four is going to be some flashback movie, or it could be, who knows.
I mean, they could have done it. I mean, right. Fantastic Four could have, they're the oldest one. They could have been, you know, they could have gotten their powers like in the 60s and then transported them into the Phantom Zone and just been hanging out there for 30 years.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I've seen folks on the internet propose that the Fantastic Four movie should be a period piece.
Yeah, totally.
And I would totally dig that. Yeah, yeah. A 60s.
Or maybe not, right.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you said, like if we use the run up to Endgame as the model, they very gracefully did that thing of big cliffhanger in Infinity War, and then they got to insert the flashback movie, which I thought worked beautifully. Again, I love Captain Marvel. And, you know, just so they did a flashback before coming back to resolve the events in Endgame. So one would think they're doing something similar here. And yeah, now I'm burning with curiosity, just mainly because I'm thinking about that bit of linkage between the parts of the grand finale, what the movie between Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars would be. And again, I'm just speculating. I thought at some point they were going to introduce Doctor Doom here. Okay,
I mean, you would have to. He plays such a big part in the modern Secret Wars storyline.
Yeah, he's in all the Secret Wars, all the different comic book versions. And, you know, for those who don't know, you know, Kang is kind of a version of Doctor Doom in one of his many, you know, time-jumping personalities. So it's not out of left field.
We've speculated this in the past. Do you think that the Secret Wars movie is going to be... And granted, none of the movies that are named after classic Marvel storylines really follow the classic Marvel storylines, right? Civil War is inspired by Civil War, but it doesn't play out the way it does in the comics. Infinity War does not play out exactly as it does in the comics. Like, they are definitely inspired by the comic storylines. That said, Secret Wars, there are two very distinctive versions of Secret Wars in comics history. The one from the 80s, which was basically just like, honestly, just designed to sell the Secret Wars toys.
Yeah.
And then you have the one, the Hickman created one of recent vintage, which was a little bit more... I mean, it was the same, similar concept. It's a bunch of heroes and villains fighting each other. Yeah. But it was definitely more plotted and more intricate in its storytelling. So if it's the Hickman style, Battleworld has like a big part of that. Mm-hmm. Do you think this is where we're going with the multiverse saga? Or, I mean, I'm assuming that's the main inspiration would be like all the multiverses collapsing. Doctor Doom or someone creates Battleworld that takes the best elements of all the different universes. And then they have to survive and create a single universe out of that.
Yeah, because that was basically the premise of the more recent Secret Wars. And I'm happy to speculate about this with you, my friend Keith. Given, you know, hoping we live so long as the series.
That's true. Like, we're talking about a movie that's coming out in 2026. Who knows where we are?
All kinds of shit could happen.
The end of the world may have happened before May 2026.
Battle world maybe like down the block.
In Trump presidency 2.
Right.
Or where God, we're in the middle of a nuclear fallout. Okay. Maybe we don't get to see the movie.
but let's just say this happens, okay? And for the record, there are actually like 4 Secret Wars comic series, but that's only if you count 2 in the middle that are really stupid. But let's say for the important ones, the original one and the most recent one. And yes, as you say, the most recent one was much more of this multi-dimensional, multiversal concept of a world stitched together by all the various different dimensions, you know, alternate Earths in the Marvel Universe. And it has a sort of Game of Thrones vibe. And to me, it wasn't really... To me, I'm nostalgically more into the old Secret Wars. But given how hard they're pushing the multiverse thing and how they're kind of labeling this whole phase like the multiverse saga, one would think they are leaning more towards the more recent iteration, which is much more about the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
And which, you know, I'll mention that comic didn't have Kang in it at all.
Right.
Dr. Doom was the main villain, and the Beyonders were sort of the main villain.
And the concept of incursions, which was introduced in Doctor Strange, was pulled directly from the Hickman story.
Right. That seeds the Hickman version, you know, that suggested very strongly. The thing that was good about the original series, which was, you know, as you said, to sell toys mainly, was that it had a very kind of straightforward, like, bunch of good guys team up versus a bunch of bad guys team up. That was cool. I mean, that was cool in an elemental way. The Hickman version was more complicated and more religious, and sort of copped a bunch of Game of Thrones themes, which are, you know, big in that year. All this to say, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, clearly, like you said, they're labeling this the multiverse saga, and this is a step they didn't take the first time around, because the first 3 phases of the MCU were not called the Infinity Saga before they did it, right? Like,
yes.
It kind of was like retroactively, like, oh, this was the Infinity Saga.
Ah, this is saga we meant to say all along.
Yeah, exactly. And now it's like, okay, we're setting up the multiverse saga, you know, and phase 4, 5, and 6 are going to be the multiverse saga. And so, like, it's a little bit more pre-planned, quote unquote, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And I think to your point about, like, all of the stuff that we've been seeing so far with the Loki show, with Spider-Man and Doctor Strange pulling in, even Deadpool probably with the Wolverine, they're pulling in like the various versions of these characters that we've seen over the years. Kind of like the idea of I've always had for the DC universe, because you've had so many iterations and versions of these characters. This is how you pull them all together into a single movie or a single series of movies. So I wouldn't be surprised if we brought back all of these Spider-Men we've seen so far, all the various X-Men we've seen. Like, you're going to see folks coming from Fox, Sony, Universal, all of these movies. You know what I mean? That this is going to happen. This is the whole point of all of this. And that's tremendously exciting. At the same time, the finale of She-Hulk kind of sets up this idea of the MCU as, you know, they pretty much just lampshaded what they're doing in the finale of
I'm so glad you said the She-Hulk. Word lampshade.
Right, because that's what it is. It was like,
big,
I mean,
lampshade.
So in the finale of She-Hulk, spoilers if you haven't seen it yet, you know, it was all leading up to the big showdown between Jen and Intelligentsia. And what ended up happening is that, like, everything hit the fan. The bad guy turned out to be one of the dudes she dated.
Right.
Abomination shows up, Titania shows up, Bruce comes back, and there's this big CGI quote-unquote fight. And then Jen, you know, looks at the camera and says, this doesn't make any sense.
Hmm.
And the Disney Plus menu pops up. And I wonder how many people watching She-Hulk that day thought they accidentally, like, hit the
press
remote.
Press their button to check if they had,
Which was great. I actually love that, you know. And Jen pops out from the She-Hulk thumbnail and goes into the real world, like actually goes to the Disney lot, goes to Marvel Studios offices, confronts the writer's room, and then, you know, she demands to see Kevin, not Kevin Feige, she demands to see Kevin. It turns out Kevin is really MODOK.
Totally MODOK. I'm kind of sad it wasn't a giant robot with a big mutant's head called Kevin, but okay, I understand. They had to draw the line somewhere.
I would have freaked out if Kevin Feige was basically Mojo with a baseball cap.
Totally, because that is Mojo. He controls the media empire.
Yeah, and he like, if I recall from the X-Men cartoon, he like would just show the X-Men cartoon as like a cartoon version of the X-Men existing as different like entertainment. Gave us
so many beautiful things, including the X-Babies.
Yeah,
and Longshot. There's a guy that we need to show up in the MCU at some point. But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
A little bit tangent. But no, yeah, I would have. I totally would have like appreciated a big fat alien guy with Kevin Feige's signature baseball cap, because that's what I loved about the robot. The robot had his baseball cap on. Anyway, so all that said, the big finale, then the big confrontation, wasn't between Jen and all of the villains and heroes from the show. It was a confrontation between Jen and the concept of the MCU.
Right.
Like, she brings up a lot of things that I've complained about, like how a lot of the Marvel movies kind of have this great setup and then they kind of like just become CG mishmash at the end, right? And then, you know, they even put a lampshade on the fact that the VFX isn't great. And I, you know, they wrote this like a year ago. They filmed this like a year ago, because the scene where she like enters the real world and lands on the soundstage was in the first teaser for She-Hulk like a year ago. So this has been the direction of where the show was going to go all along. It's not like they're reacting to like anything from the internet. So what I find is ironic and coincidental is that like, when they filmed this, they knew full well that there was going to be complaints about VFX, and they probably know how much they push their VFX houses. What I think they didn't anticipate was that would actually be news before this episode comes out, that like the VFX houses being pushed to their brinks, people complaining about it who work for Marvel. In retrospect, maybe they should have made a joke about it, because these were actual people's livelihoods who were complaining about the tremendous stress that they've been put under to do the VFX at Marvel. So anyway, all that said, they use the finale to kind of point out all of the flaws of Marvel, which I think is good self-awareness, but at the same time, let me put to you, like, does that in itself make effective storytelling?
Well, yeah, as you just said, they lampshade the whole thing, called attention to their own flaws in hopes to make a good gag out of it. And yeah, it's as you astutely pointed out, it's poking a hornet's nest, because she really does call out that thing which basically the Marvel movies, the Marvel phase leads up to, right? Final battle, way too many entrances, way too much CGI, a predictable giant scene of people bashing each other's heads. You know, she just calls it out. She's like, you know, that's just what we've been doing. Can we do something else? And it's hilarious in a way, because we know they are going to end up doing that in Secret Wars. Let's not kid ourselves. They are going to have that scene in Secret Wars, which, just like they had that scene in Endgame, everybody gets in the pool. There's a big fight. It's great. As far as, well, yeah, I kind of wanted to circle back to Secret Wars for a second, because I haven't quite ramped up my She-Hulk manifesto, as it were. But
you are the Hulk King, after all.
Shut up. Not the Hulk King. Maybe I'm the Hulk Jack.
You are the Thor Hulk critic, but that's... Oh, did I just blow your secret identity?
I am that guy. But yeah, so when we were bringing up the question of, like, which of the Secret Wars will be more based on, like, yeah, we know they're pushing this multiverse thing, but as an audience member, I do want to say this multiverse mishmash is not looking to be as ultimately satisfying as the, you know, big purple guy, you know, threatens entire universe story. I'm just talking on a sheer audience going thrill perspective, and I want to, you know, throw it back to you to ask, like, what do you hope will happen with this multiverse shit? I mean, we understand what technically will happen is that they all coagulate in Battle World and we see alternate versions of everyone. That's great. That's a big group shot. What do we want that to mean? You know, do we have any idea?
Yeah, well, I think two things. Like, I think to your point about Thanos at this juncture in the first saga, I think you could say the same thing about Thanos. Like, the only stuff we had from him was a brief teaser at the end of Avengers and him being essentially like a side character in Guardians of the Galaxy. And other than that, Thanos himself didn't seem like a threat. Like, Thanos didn't, or he didn't seem like a character, you know? And you know, like, in retrospect, Thanos is one of the great comic he's one of the great comic book movie villains of all time.
It ends up working really well.
Right. And that's because of the foundation laid in Infinity War.
Yeah.
You know, if you just think of the Thanos appearances prior to Infinity War, yeah, he's a nothing. He's a post-credit sequence.
Yeah.
So for Multiverse Saga, it's hard for me to say that, like, it doesn't feel like the threat is real because we haven't met Kang yet. We saw He Who Remains at the end of Loki, and I think ask me that question after Quantumania.
Sure. Okay.
You know, and like, does Kang seem like a real kind of threat to propel the rest of the universe? And because it does seem like Kang is the driving force, because the penultimate Avengers movie will be Kang Dynasty. So it's, mm-hmm. Kang is supposed to be the Thanos of this saga.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it could be said, like, does Kang in and of himself feel like a big enough threat? I mean, at the very least, Kang is the time travel villain. And if you're doing a multiverse saga, you want the villain who's most associated with, like, multiverses and time travel. So in that sense, like, my thing with the multiverse saga is that it was my issue with Doctor Strange. Like, if you're going to promise the multiverse, give me the multiverse. Because, like, Doctor Strange, I didn't feel like gave me the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, here's one universe. Like, it's the madness in the multiverse, and they just stayed in one universe the whole fucking time, you know?
Yeah, they gave you some madness.
Yeah, but not really a multiverse. So I want to know, like, what type of villain Kang is, because Jonathan Majors gave a very interesting performance at the end of Loki. I don't know he's going to play Kang the same way. Like, Kang is a different character ultimately. So, I don't, again, I'm reserving judgment on this saga until at least Quantumania.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, there are a whole bunch of questions. We shouldn't speculate too much. It is a secret war, after all. But, like, and that's a good thing. But I think it's safe to say we have a whole lot of ideas of where it could go wrong based on certain trends. And again, briefly, to note, part of the things backing up is not just because of creative differences in Blade, but because there are all these, you know, points of tension in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as it's expanding to become a global power, with the VFX houses, with how they handle their contracts. You know, it's there are all these things still that need to be worked out.
And ultimately, like, to your point about, like, will Kang Dynasty / Secret War work the way Infinity War / Endgame did? And I think that's also remains to be seen, because we need to see what do we think about these characters? Because by Endgame, we were fully invested in Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, the Guardians, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange. Like, they were fully fleshed out characters that had the entire world behind them. Will we feel that way about the characters who are going to assemble at Kang Dynasty? I don't know yet. Honestly,
yeah, we don't know. We don't know, honestly. But I have an idea of how it could work. And I don't know how strongly this idea has been floated. But what if, they made everything work by getting Ryan Coogler to direct Secret Wars?
Right. You've been on that train for a while.
Well, no, I came to it around that way because I was thinking, oh, he should direct Avengers versus X-Men, which I assume would happen sometime after Secret Wars, you know, in 2029.
Yeah.
Because of seated in the whole Namor versus Wakanda thing, which is originally from the Avengers versus X-Men comic. And he would do such a great job. My God, he could get that mutants as, you know, racially oppressed minority thing right for maybe the first time ever. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Among other things. And he's the most purely talented filmmaker in their stable at the moment. I'm saying, you know, in the general way.
That's what they ultimately did, right, with the Russos.
Yeah.
At that point, Winter Soldier was their crown jewel.
It absolutely was.
And it was like, okay, let's get those guys to wrap up the story.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was. Endgame was the endgame. That is the finale of the MCU as we knew it.
Yeah.
Phase 4 and beyond is a different MCU. It's a different season with different characters. And to your point, I think Wakanda Forever will be the crown jewel of this phase. And it would stand to reason. You know, but they've already got Daniel Destin-Cretton on Kang.
Yeah, so, which is a fine idea. He did a great job on Shang-Chi. But again, Kang Dynasty is a little bit even more an iffier section than Secret Wars. Because, you know, we know it'll probably be the Infinity War thing of setup of a big disaster.
Yeah. I'm sure the space-time continuum will be fucked up at the end of Kang
Dynasty. And just on a technical note, Kang Dynasty, the comics, are not as good as Secret Wars, the comics. I'm just saying Secret Wars is a bigger deal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Secret Wars is the ultimate Marvel crossover. It is the Crisis on Infinite Earths of Marvel. Right.
So there's so many questions. The only way I would feel confident about something is if someone like Ryan Coogler was writing and directing.
Right. Well, yeah, absolutely.
I'm able to say that.
Circling back to She-Hulk and the Kevin development, like Kevin Feige, like they teased Kevin Feige's appearance, and it turns out he's just a robot who developed an algorithm to kind of like, you know, activate everyone's pleasure centers with his movies. And there's some truth to that, right? But, you know, and what we're talking about, it is just interesting to think that, like, they're fully aware of the way their films are perceived. But you know what I mean? Like, so I wanted to ask you, like, I know you had some, you know, varying opinions on She-Hulk overall as a series and the finale in particular, but, like, just specifically the fourth wall-breaking stuff and the lampshading of the MCU, like, did that make you feel better that, like, the creators are fully aware of their shortcomings, or did it make you feel like, okay, just because you pointed out, it doesn't mean it's not still a problem?
Yeah, no, I liked it. I just wanted it to be sort of a more daring, honest, elevated kind of joke. I just wanted the jokes to be to be funnier, honestly, based on what I think is funny. I mean, sometimes, like, there's a little bit of, like, name-dropping or buzzword flashing, or I'm not going to say virtue signaling because that's a stupid term, but there's, like, hand-waving at things without actually, like, engaging them honestly. And I think that's where I felt underwhelmed by She-Hulk. I did like it. And moreover, like, even though I didn't like totally vibe with it, I appreciate that it was doing a lot of things that vibe with certain people. Maybe we can say broadly it was trying a lot of stuff that I'll put under the umbrella of woman dating problems. Maybe more specifically white Asian woman dating problems. But anyway, a lot of stuff that let a certain part of the audience feel seen. And that's good. I mean, that's what all of this is about. We try different things and we let different people feel seen. You know, anecdotally, my cousin lawyer and, you know, people in her cohort who are also lawyers and have been around the online dating game for a while. Parts of She-Hulk spoke to them.
The only thing that I would say about the finale that I thought didn't satisfy me as a viewer was that everything that led up to, like, the big climax, I agreed, like, when all the different characters started breaking through the walls and just punching each other, it did feel like, okay, this is kind of dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you know, realizing, oh, the whole plot or the whole climax is going to be between Jen and the Kevin robot. But then when they reset everything, that was it. Like, they actually didn't create Jen's ending.
Right.
That was the thing that was totally frustrating.
They kind of did that thing where they just said what the bad thing was without suggesting an alternative.
Right.
Or actually illustrating the alternative. And that is only going halfway, okay?
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. And that's where I felt like, okay, I get the joke worked, but you're still not completing your story. Like, what is the intelligentsia shit then? What is the, like she said, I was just about to figure out balancing Jen and She-Hulk. But that doesn't get resolved because as soon as she shows up, they're arresting Emil and they're arresting Todd. Like, there was no real resolution. It was just, like you said, a hand wave of the ending. It's like, we couldn't figure out the ending, so let's do this fourth wall break, and that's the ending.
Yeah.
That feels a little...
And Daredevil cameos again because he's cute. Yeah. It was frustrating. They skipped past a potentially good thing.
Yeah. Because, like, to your point, she makes good points about, like, why does every Marvel movie climax the same way? Why does every Marvel movie follow the same formula? Why don't we change it up?
Right.
And Kevin says, okay, you've made a good point. And then they don't do it.
Yeah.
Because that ending could have been, like, the denouement of the previous climax.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't actually fix anything, you know?
They could have done a bunch of actually subversive stuff. Like, maybe the climax is they actually talk something out for once. Like, really talk it out. Or another, you know, court case where, you know, which is how, like, shit really gets done in the real world. Or all kinds of things. I don't know. She could have bashed Kevin the robot and just, you know, destroyed the universe briefly, and Deadpool, like, you know, invents it again out of, you know, cheese whiz. It's a lot to ask of, you know, She-Hulk the television show. I wasn't saying they were gonna, like, solve every Right. But there was some frustration.
I appreciated the fourth wall break in this one, I think, more than the others, just because, like, it was the most reminiscent of the John Byrne comics, where she would, like, literally come through the page or walk across the gutters and, like, yell at John Byrne. And, like, what are you doing? This doesn't make any sense. Like, this felt like the best translation of doing that in a comic book to doing that on a TV show or on a streaming show. That I appreciate. Because sometimes the fourth wall breaks throughout the season felt a little, like, to your point, shortcuts for the writer and not anything that made sense for the progression of the show.
Yeah.
You know, in the moment I was thinking, well, wow, this is really subversive that she's going in, like, walking across the Disney lot that I've actually been on in Burbank to go find Marvel Studios and all that stuff. I thought was really great.
Sure. It was fun.
But then when it ended and I was just like, oh, that's it. Like, I thought you were actually going to, I thought they were really going to redo the ending and give us, like, a more satisfying ending. And instead they just kind of, like, papered over it. And I was like, oh, that's a little disappointing.
Yeah. And there was something about the whole She-Hulk show. And again, this is just for me. And I freaking, none of my problems were with the CGI. I don't care about the CGI at all. But I care about certain parts where it seems like they didn't quite have the strength of their own convictions or, you know, the faith in just staying with She-Hulk. Again, I've complained about this before, but, like, okay, they threw a lot of stuff out there on the wall and didn't seem to super care if it stuck. Again, what about that whole Madison Wong thing? That was just like a bit.
Yeah. They never really did explain Wong and Blonsky's relationship because he breaks him out of prison again and seemingly for good because he's, like, taking his stuff with him this time and what is that about?
Yeah, it's just so random. And that Madison Wong thing was a nice bit, but it was just a bit. We didn't stay with it. And again, at the end, I don't think I know She-Hulk that well. And I could have known her better, except for all these freaking little bits.
Well, and then another bit is Bruce going to Sakaar. And
the whole
World War Hulk stuff, maybe it's going to be in a movie. They kind of hinted at, like, save it for the Hulk movie.
Right.
Maybe that's the unnamed Marvel movie.
Yeah, because that's one where they can go to a whole other planet. Remember? Because that's kind of World War Hulk. It's a whole detour from Hulk's way far away across the galaxy. Has nothing to do with Earth proper. Maybe that's what they're doing.
You know, Scar, I was so surprised they literally introduced Scar. I was like, whoa. Right. Like, it's not even, like, you know, a hint. It was like, oh, and here's my son Scar.
Right, and what the fuck was that? I'm sorry. All respect and love to Greg Pak. He invented that whole storyline. But She-Hulk spends all this time, like, getting off this, you know, the cliche ending and getting back to her ending. And then for some reason, Hulk and his son, like, come and basically, like, overwhelm the whole,
like... Well, then that was my thing. Like, everything that she complained about, they didn't actually fix. Because, like, Kevin the Robot says, well, you know, Hulk is back because we need to introduce it. She's like, save it for the movie.
Yeah.
But he's going to, I don't care. And then they ended up doing it anyway. That's my point. It's that, like, everything you asked them to fix, they didn't actually fix. They just delayed it 5 minutes.
Yeah. Now, to be positive, I do think they hit on good themes and maybe just didn't marinate them long enough. For example, I do think the central issue of Daredevil at consulting She-Hulk about how to have a real job in the justice system and to have a superhero job in the extra justice last system. Week.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, last week, I thought that's a great theme, and that's basically is what the show should be all about. So it's not like it wasn't there. For me, that's when it spoke to me, and ostensibly she reaches that, you know, balance in the end. We just don't really feel that she's reached
right.
The balance.
I mean, it's the show don't tell. It's the old show don't tell adage.
No.
Well, one show that did show and not just tell is the other Disney Plus show that came out this week. Let's talk about Andor after the break.
Let's.
Guess what? Goalie Nutrition is sponsoring Hard Knock Life, and you can go to goalie.com to buy apple cider vinegar gummies, their ashwagandha gummies, super fruit gummies, and super greens gummies, and you get 10% off plus free shipping if you use the code HARDKNOCK at goalie.com. This is honestly, I've been taking the Goalie gummies now for a couple weeks, and I have to say, they're tasty and they're good for you. Have you guys been enjoying the Goalie gummies?
I really like them. They're yummy, but it's a nice to add to my, like, routine of already, like, I normally take just straight vitamin C, so it's nice to have, like, extra supplements.
For a long time, people have praised the benefits of apple cider vinegar. And, you know, as someone who's had to, like, drink straight apple cider vinegar sometimes when I'm not feeling well, or, you know, I have some joint pain and your mom is like, drink some apple cider vinegar. It's not the most appetizing home remedy, let's just say.
Right. It tastes horrible.
It's so, like, the apple cider part is like, ooh, does it taste like apple cider? It's like, no, it tastes like vinegar. But ACV is very good for you. And the fact that Goalie has been able to put the ACV into these tasty little gummies made with pectin and fruit peels, which make them vegan, which is cool. So if you're vegan, you can still rock these gummies, because everyone knows gummies are usually made out of, like, gelatin and nasty shit. These are made out of complete non-GMO, gelatin-free, gluten-free, vegan ingredients. And you can get the benefits, all of the benefits of apple cider vinegar taking these tasty, delicious, convenient gummies. So go to goalie.com and use the code HARDKNOCK, that's HARDNOC, just like the podcast you're listening to. Get 10% off your purchase of Goalie products and free shipping.
It's a much better delivery device for that apple cider vinegar.
Yeah.
These Goalie gummies are great. You get it, and it's a delicious little candy. And I've been enjoying the Superfruits one. I did feel kind of refreshed after taking a few of those.
Yeah, no, but I'm loving them so far, and they're definitely tasty. If you just want tasty gummies, at least just eat them for the yummiest.
Yeah. So go to goalie.com, use the code HARDKNOCK, HARDNOC, get 10% off your purchase and free shipping at goalie.com with the code HARDKNOCK. The show Andor continually surprises me in how good it is. Like, you think, okay, it's good, but it's going to have to drop off. Every Disney Plus show has a drop off in the middle. And holy shit, the heist itself was thrilling. My one critique, it became less of a critique towards the end, but, like, I was worried that the two black guys died first, because when they killed Gorn, I was like, okay, that's kind of shady. And then they killed Theramin, the former stormtrooper guy. I was like,
you're right. You're absolutely right.
So then the three white people and Andor survive. And I was like, really? We're going to, like, it's going to be the three white people survive. We're just going to not... You could have at least let Theramin live, kill one of the others. I don't know.
Yeah, that was too much of a familiar bad trope, but it's not the worst thing.
It wasn't... It did not overshadow the rest of the episode, which was great. It's something I could not point out, that if Gorn died, I was like, oh, that's... I mean, he was the Imperial guy, so okay, whatever. But then they killed Theramin.
Both Imperial guys, too.
Well, right, because he used to be a stormtrooper. Yeah, but, you know, the funny thing is that, like, previous to him dying, too, I was thinking, wow, they're doing the Finn story better than they did Finn in the sequel trilogy.
They are. They sure are.
But then they killed him, and I was like, fuck. Why'd they go and do that? They at least let him live to the next episode. But then they ended up killing Skeen and
Thomas Paine guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right to point that out. I think I sort of glossed over things like that, because to me, everyone in the show is British. Like, is me or is just everyone in this show is from the UK?
Except Diego.
For Andor herself, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And except for that Skarn guy who's, like, from, you know, Minnesota or something. But, I mean, Karn. I mean, whatever.
Right. The guy eating Cocoa Puffs.
Kyle MacLachlan's mutant child. But everyone's overwhelmingly from the UK.
Yeah, absolutely. Can
we just say this show? And that's fine.
I always like that about the Empire. Like, the Empire is literally the United Kingdom. Everyone's white and British.
Yeah.
At least in the original trilogy.
Yeah, if we were to metaphorize it, it sort of speaks the time of the Empire is at its height, right? So it's sort of like the British Empire. They're at the heights of their just being the dominant cultural force in the galaxy. So maybe that's when everyone speaks with a British accent.
And that's one thing I've always had a little bit of an issue with the timeline of Star Wars, because the rule of the Galactic Empire was 20 years. Like, in the grand scheme of things, it's a blip.
So it wasn't that bad, considering.
It was a blip. Like, I mean, really, think about how long, if the analog is the British Empire, and all the ill that did to the world. Would that last, like, 150 years, 200 years? Like, Luke was born right when the Empire became, and then, but before he can drink, he's already blown up the Death Star.
Dude, so yes, but dude, by contrast, you know, 4 years of Trump was enough to upset things pretty significantly and cataclysmically. Let's not say we couldn't pack a lot of evil into those 20 years.
No, that's absolutely right. And it goes back to like what I also appreciate about Andor, though, is that you get to see the banality of evil because we've never seen the Imperials' family lives.
Yeah.
Like your point about Cyril and eating Cocoa Puffs with his mom.
Right.
And then even in this episode, you had the constable guy, I forget his name, but it, like we met his wife and his kid.
Yeah, their family kind of sucks, right?
Right, but
they are a family.
They are a family. Like, and they're very mundane things about like, well, he doesn't feel well. And like, just the conversation that they have is not something you typically associate with like admirals and stuff in the Galactic Empire, which was, I think, again, shows the real world through the lens of Star Wars, which I thought is utterly fascinating about this show.
Yes, and also by contrast, the Rebels, as they stand right now, are a bunch of sketchy folks, can we say?
Yeah.
Some kind of, like, what's his face? Who, again, Scheme. Andor mercs in the end, right? That's his big move. And yeah, not to say we didn't totally see that coming, but yeah, he was going to make off with the whole thing. He's a little hustler.
Right.
The Rebellion is not just like, oh, going to do good for the sake. I mean, Matrix Mouse was the... Sorry, I keep calling him.
He has his name.
The Thomas Kane guy.
Yeah, right.
I don't remember his name exactly, but he was the most true blue believer guy.
Yeah.
So they represented that aspect. True blue manifesto for goodness and progressive ideals. And yeah, he gets killed tragically by a piece of cargo. Maybe by a huge chunk of money, which is...
Yeah, well, it wasn't just cargo. He was killed by like a million Republic credits, which is...
Right.
Which is... Kind of irony upon it. Yeah, exactly. I believe it's called a metaphor.
Yeah. It's, and again, good stuff, Andor. But I do think that's real cool because, again, the essence of this show is, do we believe the part in Rogue One when Andor said, I've done terrible things, I've lied and stolen and been a saboteur and assassin? Do we believe that exists in Star Wars? And, you know, I like to think it does, you know, with, you know, it's in friction with my, you know, little kid fan self who wants everything to be simpler, but it's good. It feels like, you know, maturing.
Well, and the thing is that like the complicated hero was with Star Wars from the beginning because that was Han Solo's whole deal.
Sure.
You know, like, and before Lucas went back and kind of tried to scrub his personality by like, oh, he was shooting in self-defense and all that nonsense, right? Like, the fact that he murders Greedo was integral to his character in A New Hope, right? Like, I'm the suave, like, I will shoot you under the table.
Yeah.
And I don't become a hero until the end when I come back and save Luke at the Death Star. Like, that's integral to who Han Solo is. I'm just in it for the money. But it's being around you and Leia and Obi-Wan that's made me want to join the Rebellion. And so, like, him being a general and Return of the Jedi, or even like being on Hoth despite all these bounty hunters after him, means more because he was a scoundrel a movie previous and became a hero.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah.
But to your point, but like the black and white nature of Star Wars, even Lucas himself was like, well, we don't really want Han Solo to be this bad when we first meet him. So let's just say he shot in self-defense.
Right. You sanitize it a bit.
Yeah.
And again, I think part of, and the way I feel this more too, is like in how badly funded and unslick the Rebellion is at this point. Mm-hmm. Like that makes me believe in this story more. Like another thing about, you know, when we meet the Rebellion in Star Wars, you know, the original ones, they're already pretty slick. They've got all these, you know, they've got all these spaceships. Yeah. They've got an organized military promotion system. They've got all this stuff. You don't feel like, oh, we don't have, you know, we're not getting paid. We don't have enough medicine. We don't have enough supplies. We don't feel those real guerrilla war things. And Andor, they're really making an effort to show that they have these problems.
Yeah. And they, at this point, they are just still cells. And I think we're still yet, we're going to meet Saw Gerrera eventually on this series. Because this is just the beginning. Even Skellen Skarsgård's character, Luthen, said the previous episode, like, it'll all either be over tomorrow or just beginning. And that was, you know, that was such a great ending to the previous episode. And then you see his, like, elation when he reads the newspaper, essentially.
Yeah.
About the terrorist attack on Aldani. And, you know, again, like, I just love the real-worldness of it all. Like, Mon Mothma giving a speech on the Senate floor to essentially an empty chamber, which is, if anyone's ever watched C-SPAN, is how our Senate works. You see these like very passionate, like every time AOC is delivering a passionate speech on the House floor, if you pan the camera 2 feet over, there's nobody there.
Yeah. Like one senator checking their phone.
So what I love is like Mothma's giving this impassioned speech about human rights, and everyone's like on their tablets reading about the terrorist attack.
Exactly. Yeah. Way too real. And yeah, and again, speaking of beginnings and ends, I said it before, but they're doing a very sensible structural thing of these mini trilogies. Basically, you know, one feature comprised of three episodes.
Yeah.
You know, this is kind of duh, but it's worth pointing out, you know, that the first three episodes we could say were basically Andor gets recruited and leaves the planet. And that was like its own mini movie. And this one, these last three episodes, we could say basically they do the heist. And, you know, that makes it, again, a little jagged in some points and not as much pew, pew, pew as one might or expect ordinarily. But it's had a great sense of, you know, momentum towards that ending.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Absolutely. Like, first of all, I'm a sucker for a heist movie. I love when you have the crew and they all like have their different roles, and, you know, Vel and Cinta were like, we're going to be the frogmen who swim under the water and infiltrate the base that way. And you guys are going to pretend to be stormtroopers. And then, you know, we're going to hijack this and do that. Like, all that stuff is great. And I love the contrast with, again, them doing this plotting with the Imperials, again, acting like regular people. Like, I love the, it's a small scene, but Gorn is talking to a couple, like, you know, standard troopers. And they all want to watch the Eye. Like, that's the thing. Like, they're all soldiers. They're all, like, workers at the station. But there's this big fireworks display that night. And that's all they really want to do.
And
they
can I just say really quickly, that's the most Disneyland thing ever. That's all about watching a fireworks show. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, but, you know, but again, the fact that, like, these would normally be stormtroopers. I love that they didn't make them stormtroopers so we could see their faces. Yeah. These are just regular Imperial troopers. But at the same time, they're human beings. They were just, like, we also want to be awe-inspired by this celestial display. Yeah. And so, like, the happiness when he's like, you're dismissed and stuff. Like, I don't know. It's just something about, like, knowing that the Imperials were also, like, just regular people. I don't know. Maybe on the one hand, it's like, doesn't it make it hard? It's like the Kevin Smith thing. Doesn't it make it harder to, like, root for the rebels when you know that, like, he blew up a bunch of general contractors and alongside, like... But then again, the same thing, though, to your point about like the Trump administration, what does it mean when you are working for a murderous empire?
Yeah, it begs the very useful question. Who were those guys who fought for the Nazis and with Mussolini and the fascists? And who were those guys? They weren't all just
ideologues,
mind controlled racists. At some point, people, you know, are moved to do what history will record as terrible things. And it's useful to interrogate why. And he's doing something like that and letting us really see the personalities that make up this empire. But in some ways it errs too much towards you don't even remember, wait, why are the Imperial dudes so bad? They just seem like guys with sucky jobs. but I mean, you know, that guy, I can't remember his name, the guy who's basically mean to his wife and his kid.
I don't remember. Know, but the main boss there, right.
Yeah, he is. It is detectable that he's a bad dude.
Yeah, I mean, like, the disdain he has for the natives. And, I mean, pull out. Yes, they all seem like normal people working a sucky job. But why are they there? They've displaced a native population. Yeah. They've strip mined their holy land to do whatever it is that they're doing at that station, right? Like, one thing we didn't talk about last episode that I really took away from the previous one is... The scene that I thought was the most chilling is when Andor and his group were kind of like, you know, hanging out by the river or whatever. And then this TIE fighter screams by.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, but it's doing it on purpose. Not because it knows that they're like, you know, a rebel cell about to attack. They're just doing it to be assholes. It's like the cop who drives through the black neighborhood and like mean mugs everybody.
Yeah.
Just, I can't, I'm doing this because I can. And that's going back to, like, yes, there's the banality of evil, but then there's just evil assholes as well, taking advantage of regular people. And I love that, you know, duality of the empire. Because, again, you know, like, we are the evil empire. America is very much analogous to what the Imperials are doing in Star Wars.
Yeah, depending on where you stand, and it's all in the perspective. And again, I was also going to say, just cinematically great, that scene you mentioned, to restore the fear of the TIE fighters. Because, the Rebels don't even have air power at this point. Again, to them not being very put together at this point. They don't have air power. So there's something nice about recalling, what made TIE fighters
intimidating
in the first place.
Yeah.
Because there's a great scene of the TIE pilots, gearing up and launching in this episode. And it is cool, it is scary. And then, they just got blown up again as all TIE fighters are.
right.
Oh, yeah, it's Star Wars. Their TIE fighters are just brushed off.
What seemed like a throwaway scene sets up the climax in this episode. Because, you're supposed to fear TIE fighters. Right, especially if you're just driving essentially like a money truck.
Yeah, a weird kind of minivan of a spaceship.
Because that's all. It's a Brinks truck. You're flying through space, and with no shields and no artillery. Because what takes out the TIE fighters is the celestial fireworks.
The eye stuff. the eye drops. Because they don't have air power at this point.
Yeah,
and obviously the Empire is superior. Tactical air power.
Yeah.
And that just feels real.
Such a great episode. And I didn't think about it in the moment, but now that you've recalled how the format of the Andor season has been three episode chunks. Yeah. Absolutely 4, 5, 6 has been like its own film. Because this was a very satisfying end. If it ended here, it's a complete story. Just like the first three episodes, had it ended there, we were like, oh wow, this is such a great prologue to Andor's story. You could leave it there and then have another movie next year. These three episodes felt similar. In isolation, they tell a complete story.
Yeah. And I think that's what we're going to get. I think we're going to get two more feature Star Wars movies, basically, in this season. And, this is but it's basic storytelling stuff that Tony Gilroy and his brothers, apparently, are good at.
three-act structure. Who knew?
Who knew? Three is a magic number. We can break the fourth wall all you want, kids, but three is a magic number in storytelling, and it works. Trilogies. Okay, anyway, so we have two more movies to look forward to, and I am actively looking forward to them. Can we talk about Val and Cinta for a little bit? Mm-hmm. Or mainly Val, because I have to say, I just have a big affection for Val.
I think Cinta's pretty cool. The way she...
Cinta is also pretty cool.
Murked those Imperials was pretty badass.
It was pretty badass, yeah. And it was an important moment because they're like, everyone's, dicey about opening up the blaster fighting, and she cuts straight to it, and she lets them know that they mean business. It's an important thing.
Don't you feel bad for the Imperial guys who are like the caterers?
God, those poor Imperial caterers.
The constable, I keep calling him the constable. I don't know what his...
Let's just call him the constable because we can't remember his name.
Right. But when he walks in, they're like, oh, here's some green wine. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Here's some blue milk pudding for you. Oh, God. Yeah. I've got the suckiest of the sucky jobs.
Yeah. Again, it reminds me of the Clerks dialogue about
they get blown up too.
Fucking, you're blowing up the caterers as well.
Yeah. But, war fucking sucks.
Yeah.
But anyway, but to the point of feeling the real consequences of that, Val and Cinta, probably a queer couple, it seems like. They don't make a huge big deal of it, but that's cool,
What happened to Cinta? Did she die?
I was worried about that too, but I think if you look closely, she folds herself back into the native Eldani people's group somehow. I think she makes a stealthy exit, as one would expect was her plan, and so stealthy we almost missed it. I think she makes a stealthy exit and hooks up again with the local Dunnies, which of course begs the question, what happens?
Because at first, as I mentioned, they killed off Gorn and they killed off Theramin, and then Cinta wasn't. It was like, really, the white people are the only ones who are going to survive?
Yeah, no, that would not fly.
Until they didn't survive, so that was like, okay, fine.
Right.
It ends up being just the white lady who survives, so.
Right. But speaking of those white ladies, and there are quite a few of them in Andor, I really like Val, and there's a moment, I love the close-up on her when she's deciding whether to start the mission or not. When they're communicating and they're, she and Cinta are already on the bridge and everything's poised to go, and she has a moment of, let's say, pretty big hesitation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some people who are like, let's say, performatively macho or have watched way too many action movies might think this is like a superfluous moment. Like in action movies, we just go and say, go, damn the torpedoes, execute, blah, 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 rah, rah, rah. But it's not actually like that. You are putting, they know the plan is dangerous. They know someone's probably going to die. You know, as we're introduced to Vel, she's talking about, you know, she wants to lead, whether she can be a leader. And this is a real hard thing. They're going to go and someone's going to die. And I think she has a really great acting moment there when she's just thinking about it and hesitant.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think there are a few really great close-up acting moments in the sci-fi genre movies. And I would compare that to the part at the end of Aliens where Sigourney Weaver is going down in the elevator and she's gearing up to fight the last of alien queens. That to me is one of like the greatest acting bits in sci-fi action genre, because it's not about blowing shit up. It's about, you see this person and like the decision that they're actually making, and you almost feel like what that decision would be like in real life. And I know that one really got me.
If anything, like, not only is Andor some of the best direction and best writing in Star Wars, it's some of the best acting across the board. The actress who's playing Vel, Diego Luna, is knocking it out of the park.
Yeah.
Genevieve O'Reilly's knocking it out of the park as Mon Mothma. Like, it's rare that you see such great acting in the small moments, especially, right? Because, you know, again, one of the things that's synonymous with Star Wars, love it or hate it, is pretty stiff acting and, like,
yeah. I like to say broad acting.
Difficult dialogue to, like, spit out with a straight face, right? Like, that's just been, again, baked in the sauce from the beginning. I want to get a Tashi station and get some power converters. Like, that's been there from the beginning.
What am I even saying? Power converters.
You know, and one thing that Andor has is just like the subtle acting, the powerful acting, like all across the board. Even Cyril, like there's pain in his face.
Yeah,
even totally. When he doesn't say anything, when he's sitting there eating blue milk cereal. I think it's slowly, if not slowly, it's my favorite Star Wars content.
Right. But it is doing it slowly through slowness
yeah.
of style and accumulation of effect. That's worth noting.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's at a different rhythm, but in an old school way, it shows that a rhythm can be effective.
Yeah. I would be remiss to not mention, since we did talk about Han Solo earlier, that I think it's been confirmed, or it's almost confirmed, or like there's more stories coming out about, to tie the Andor piece back to the Marvel stuff.
Oh boy.
General Thunderbolt Ross is indeed going to be Harrison Ford in the Thunderbolts
movie. Oh, really? We talked about that last week and I said you were full of shit, but
it seems like it's a confirmed casting. And I just want to say I'm still here for the Sam Elliott casting, particularly if we're bringing back the multiverse. Canonize the Ang Lee Hulk and bring back Sam Elliott. I don't know that Harrison Ford like just makes sense as Thunderbolt Ross, just because, like, I don't know.
What, you're going against the rumor train and saying they could still get Sam Elliott?
I mean, like, maybe.
Such hubris, Keith.
At the same time, like, they did fucking cast Robert Redford as like a senator in Winter Soldier. So like
one of the great coups of Marvel casting ever. Again,
throwing him as like Alexander Pierce. Who the hell is Alexander Pierce? No one cares about Alexander. And you cast Robert Redford. So, you know, no shade to William Hurt. He is an Oscar winner, but like Harrison Ford is Thunderbolt Ross will make people care about Thunderbolt Ross more than they did in the past.
Right. And more than they should, I'd argue. I mean, again, what do you actually feel about this piece of?
He's probably going to be Red Hulk.
Slash rumor. Is that a good idea?
And yeah, like I just picture Harrison Ford in the polka dot suit, and then
yeah, this doesn't like that.
Yeah, he's not. Doing
let that. Harrison Ford do something dignified. He could be the Beyonder anyway. But I mean,
I just want to see Harrison Ford on the Marvel press tour, like giving people like dirty looks.
Yeah, giving no shits about.
Anyway.
I started all of this, you could legitimately say.
Yeah. Dominic, what's nerd popping?
Oh, what's nerd popping? Well, I was going to mention that, you know, my friends and friends of the podcast, MC Frontalot and Megaran, are having a mini tour right now, which, you know, honestly, by the time this episode of this podcast might come, might be done already. But for some reason, it isn't. They're doing some shows in the East Coast.
They were just in Baltimore a few days ago. I should have seen them. Yeah. I should have.
One should. They're also in New York and in some other of those major East Coasty cities. And they'll have a live stream show towards the end of the month with their Four Eyed Horseman set up, which has two other hardcore rappers. And anyway, live music or live streamed music, Godfathers of Nerdcore Hip Hop, and we might have them on the podcast.
Absolutely. Yes,
at some time in the near future. So shouting out to them.
Absolutely. Mega Ran, MC Front a Lot. Hopefully they will be on Hard Knock Life soon. For me, what's nerd popping is spoiler alert if you have not seen Black Adam yet. So if you don't want to be spoiled on Black Adam.
Black Adam, give it to me.
End the podcast now. You know, don't listen anymore. Just turn it off. Subscribe and like and all that stuff. If you're still listening, I'm going to spoil the end of Black Adam. Here's the thing. I haven't seen Black Adam. And yet, I've been spoiled on the ending of Black Adam. Or more specifically, the post-credit scene of Black
Adam. Did you seek out this information or did it come to you in a feed somehow?
No comment. I plead the fifth.
Okay, fine.
So if you recall, last week's Nerd Poppin' was, there's a rumor Henry Cavill's in Black Adam. This week's Nerd Poppin', it's not a rumor. Henry Cavill's in Black Adam.
Okay.
As Superman.
Okay.
The scene leaked on the internet.
Okay.
I saw it. I shouldn't have, but I have no willpower. I cannot be a Green Lantern.
You cannot be a Green Lantern.
I saw the tweet. I clicked play right away. Okay. I didn't even hesitate.
And you can't make yourself unsee it with a magic spell from the Vishanti or something.
Exactly.
Okay.
All I'll say is if you recall last week, all I wanted for a Henry Cavill return to Superman is to let him wear his hair naturally. Well, guess what? We have a spit curl. So I'm cool. I will sit through the credits, even though I've seen the post-credits sequence, just to see Henry Cavill's glorious spit curl on the IMAX screen.
It's about the hair. This is your joy, Keith. This is your best life.
That's it. Yeah. I just wanted Henry Cavill to sport a spit curl.
Wow, it really is all about the hair with you. I didn't realize how serious you were about the hair game. Okay.
Well, it's funny too, right? Like, you can't really, I mean, it's shitty cell phone video, so you can't really hear what he's saying to Black Adam, and you can't really hear the music.
Uh-huh.
He's clearly wearing the red and blue suit, which I'm thankful for, because one of the things I hated about the Snyder Cut, and I've been on record, I thought the Snyder Cut was fine.
Yeah.
But the thing I hated about the Snyder Cut is not that he wears the black suit. Fine. When Superman returns from the dead, he wears a black suit. I get it. But the very last scene of Superman, you recall, is when he rips the shirt open. Right?
Yeah.
And in the original version, or in the Joss version, when you know, he rips it open, he's got the red and yellow S.
Yeah.
And then in the Zack Snyder version, he rips the shirt open and the S is still black and silver. Why is Superman still wearing a black and silver
suit? You think that's bullshit.
When the whole point of the black suit is that, like, this is a regeneration suit. Yeah, you know?
It's a transitional suit.
Right. But now that I'm my full self again, I will wear my red and yellow hopeful, the S stands for hope suit. And in the Snyder Cut, for whatever, like, there's no explanation why his suit is black. In fact, what I doubly hate about the Snyder Cut is that the only time you see Superman in the red and blue is when he's evil.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why is the red and blue suit his evil suit? It makes no sense. Anyway. No,
I agree with you. That sucks. But anyway. Again, and this is the longest, the spoiler's almost over, folks. But
well, that's why I told him to just turn the podcast off.
You think there's redemption in this? Because we'll get to talk about it.
Yeah.
There's redemption for those costume sins.
Here's my hope. The fact that Superman is wearing his red and blue suit, that he's got his curly hair, and apparently they're playing the John Williams theme. Mm. I'm agnostic on that, to be honest. Like, I understand that the John Williams theme is so iconic that it's instantly recognizable. Of course, anytime you see Superman on screen, I remember 20 years ago, I teared up when they played hints of the Superman score in Smallville, mm-hmm. when Clark was discovering his Kal-El identity. Mm-hmm. So there's something about the strains of the Superman March, right? That said, I get it. Like, there are folks who are upset that, like, they're playing the John Williams theme because that's not that version of Superman. Like, Hans Zimmer did come up with a really amazing score for Man of Steel. Like, say what you will about the movie, the score is one of my favorite movie scores of all time.
It's a good score.
So, you know, but again, I'm agnostic. Like, I get why for a 5-second end credit sequence, you want to go with the most recognizable Superman theme when Superman shows up on screen. And of course, like, the Snyder bots are going to be pissed off no matter what. So I'm not even going to, you know. But all of this is leading up to what I am hopeful about. And I mentioned this last week. I never faulted Henry Cavill for my issues with the DCEU. Brittany and I talked about, like, Henry Cavill's nature is very Superman, very Clark Kent. He's kind of a dork. Mm-hmm. He's kind of, like, got this boyish charm. Like, when he plays Sherlock Holmes in the Enola Holmes movies, he's very charming. Mm. When he's in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., he's very charming.
Mm-hmm.
Superman, he's the stoic nothing, right? The 5-second scene I saw with the shitty cell phone video filled me with more hope that Henry Cavill may get now an opportunity to play a Superman that he was supposed to. Like, the Joss Whedon version of Justice League is a shit show.
Yes.
And he's got a stupid CGI face through most of the movie. Yes, but I have to say, I actually appreciated his demeanor in the Justice League Joss version. He seems more like Superman.
Yeah.
In that version. No.
Others have argued, and they're right, that the Snyder Superman is verging on sociopathic, some kind of detached from humanity asshole. Not the Superman that we like.
Seriously. Which is what Snyder was going for, right? Like, what did Jonathan Kent, his father, the salt of the earth, tell him when he's a child, when he said, should I have just let those people die on the school bus? What does Jonathan Kent say? Maybe. I hate that. I hate that with a burning passion.
There's all sorts of things wrong with that.
There's a line that Martha Kent says to Superman in BVS. You don't owe these people anything.
Yeah, what the fuck is that?
I hate it. So, all that's
filled you with hope. Okay.
So, you wouldn't bring back Henry Cavill for a 5-second Superman cameo if you didn't have plans to bring back Henry Cavill as Superman.
Sorry, did you just say that word plan?
Well,
yeah. You said the word plan and it related to DC movie.
Touche.
So charming. I'm sure there's a plan. I'll say that.
No, touche, touche.
I'm sure there's a plan. Go on.
Who knows? But one of the reasons you haven't seen Henry Cavill back in the suit since Justice League is that, like, there's been question of whether or not he was going to come back at all, right? Like, famously in Shazam, the camera pans right to his neck and then cuts. And then, of course, the end of Peacemaker, you only see him in silhouette. You don't actually see, even though they got Jason Momoa and Ezra Miller, that you don't see Henry Cavill. Because, again, it's like, is Henry Cavill still Superman? This is at least confirmation that, for now, he is still Superman. Dwayne Johnson has been very not coy about the fact that he, not only is Henry in the movie, that he wants to do a Henry Cavill Superman movie with Black Adam.
So they can tussle?
Yeah, well, of course. It's always going to be the Black. It's a new BVS, Black Adam versus Superman.
Okay.
But, you know, again, I think the one person that made it happen was Dwayne Johnson. And what one of the reasons is because they share a agent. You know, Henry Cavill's agent is Dwayne Johnson's agent. Danny Garcia manages them both. So, like, that's The Rock's ex-wife. So, if anyone's going to make it happen, it was going to be The Rock. And maybe now we'll finally get a Superman movie, a proper Superman movie with Henry in the role. So,
that's awesome. This is such a large story. Man of Steel, I kind of like.
I like three quarters of it.
There are a lot of good things about it.
Yeah.
Anyway. I guess we'll take that up.
Next week. I don't know if you're going to see Black Adam next week, but we can talk about
that. That's what I was going to ask. We are kind of going to go see Black Adam, right?
I have my
ticket. Sort of our job.
Right? Yeah, I have my ticket.
Okay. I didn't realize, but yeah, I guess one should. I am actually honestly excited, not having done this whatever passive searching for spoilers thing that you seem to have.
Oh, sorry.
Show me the whole movie so I can complain about it. Thing that you can do with social media, but I've actually become excited because I want to, you know, I want to see this tussle with the Justice Society.
Yeah, they look cool.
think it's cool. Yeah, even though it's a very weird, like, you know, patchwork team version of the Justice Society, it's still interesting. Like, Adam Smasher, what is it, Dr. Fate, and Hawkman. And yeah, who is like one of those like Kingdom Come like hybrid characters. Like, wasn't she invented in Kingdom Come in the future? Anyway, which is fine. I'm excited about that part of it.
Yeah. Well, stay tuned. Next week, we'll definitely discuss Black Adam. And if you're still listening, you know, sorry I spoiled the movie. Dominic Ma, how can people find you on the internet?
Sorry.
To complain about spoiling Black Adam.
I'm Dominic Ma. On Twitter, Instagram, I'm at Dama, D-O-M-M-A-H.
You can find me on Twitter at TheRealChow, @TheRealChow, and on Instagram at RealKeithChow. Follow the Nerds of Color at the Nerds of Color, and go to HardKnockMedia.com to find all the podcasts in the Hard Knock family. Please give us a rating and a review if you do. Find our videos at YouTube.com/TheNerdsOfColor. And support us on patreon.com/nerdsofcolor, buy merchandise at tpublic.com, and until next time.
I mean, please follow me on Twitter at Dama, but also you can follow me at Superman is not in Black Adam. That's my other handle. That wasn't the joke I wanted to. It was cool. Anyway,
so cool. Do the other joke and I'll decide which one I'll keep.
No, I'm saying I in my head that joke is better.
Oh.
Yeah. All right. But we are going to go see Black Adam.
Yes.
And we'll talk about it next week. This is the Hard Knock Life, but not the Chicka Kind. More like the people.